So, to be the effective criterion of inflation. So, how do we usually study inflation? Well, we take Lagrange. If we want to generate inflation, we take the Lagrange with the most generic function as static as possible. Then we solve the equation of motion for the background in FRW, and we look for a solution accelerating, a quasi-simple solution. If we find them, then we study the perturbation around this background. However, once we do this procedure, what we find is that the theory of the perturbation is very different from the theory with which we started from, usually a Lorentz invariant theory like this one. And in fact, we would like to focus directly on this theory of the perturbation. And if we do that, we see that, as I was saying, it is rather different. In fact, when you specialize around the perturbation, the time homomorphisms are broken because under a shift under time, like this, the scalar perturbation doesn't transform as a scalar, but goes shifts by constant, like it has a linear transformation, like a ghost motion. Once one does this, this means that the theory of the perturbation is different from the one we started from, and one would like to really to work to study the effective field theory for this fluctuation, because the symmetries with which you're starting from, the symmetry around this background are very different from the symmetry of the Lagrange we're starting from. And in particular, because of this gauge transformation, then one can go in unitary gauge when this, one can make a tend if so that one chooses phi to be homogeneous on each space slices. That is, this is equivalent to taking the scalar field as time. This is like a unitary gauge. And in this gauge, the scalar mode disappears from the Lagrange, but it is eaten inside the metric, which now carries not only the two polarization, but one more, the scalar fluctuation. This is very similar to when we go to unitary gauge in spontaneously broken, gauge, non-abelian gauge theories. One polarization is carried on by the massive gauge boson. Now, once we go into this gauge, we can use the use of effective field theory and run down the most generic Lagrangian with the degrees of freedom we're left with, which are only the metric fluctuations. And the most generic Lagrangian will be this one, which now looks very complicated, but I will explain later. And this very complicated Lagrangian, however, is the most generic Lagrangian for single field inflation and contains all the models that were developed so far and even more. And however, even though since it is not very simple, we can use a nice physical property of this theory, which is the fact that this is a theory for a spontaneously broken gauge theories, because the time diffeomorphism are spontaneously broken. And we can reintroduce the Gostom boson and use the equivalence theorem of Gostom boson that says that at the high energies, the Gostom boson decoupled from the metric fluctuation and becomes the most relevant degrees of freedom. And once we do this, we find the following Lagrangian, which, considering the generality of the Lagrangian, is rather simple. This pi is the scalar field, you see, it's kinetic term, interaction, so on and so forth.
Pi and metric or pi?
What is the relation between pi? I will explain it, but you can think of pi as if it is a normal scalar field, pi is delta phi of phi dot.
Is equivalence theorem for gauge theories?
Excuse me?
Is equivalence theorem for gauge theories? What is it?
Yeah, I will explain. I will go back. I will explain more carefully. Yeah, this is just a little to go. So, before actually constructing more slowly, because I want to present it quickly, let me summarize what is the need, why there is a need to do an effective field theory of inflation. And the reason is that we have used so far an effective field theory, which is the description of a system through its lowest dimension operator compatible with the symmetries, as our guiding line in particle physics for the last 30 years. And it is, in general, if you do effective field theory, you find generic results and simple. And also, you are exploiting very well what is the symmetries of the system. And therefore, you are automatically getting what is explicit from the symmetry of the problem, which in this case is the fact that you are very close to the inflation, is the fact that you are very close to the system background. Operators in effective field theory are parameterization or correction. And if you start for standard raw inflation, these operators will put down are the higher energy correction to the inflationary theory, to the standard raw inflation. In fact, you get to know all possible operator, and it's easy to estimate their importance. And since you have been very generic from the beginning, you are able to unify all the models. And also, there are two technical points that are problematic when you consider Lagrangian field normal scalar field Lagrangian, but you're considering not in the regime of the classical Schrödinger inflation, like generic polynomial of d phi square or like DBI inflation. Those are very strange Lagrangian. And there can be field definition there, which can change completely the structure of the Lagrangian, but don't change the physics. Instead, what we will develop here is a standard parameterization of the scalar field. And also, as I will highlight in the end, this is really the right setup to do loops and to find the counter terms for inflation. So let me outline so what we're going to do. So this is the final result. And we will construct this Lagrangian unitary gauge, and then we introduce the Gostung boson. And then we study this Lagrangian, and so see the various limits of all the single field in model. And we'll explore all the possible signatures. In particular, we are able to prove theorems, like, for example, the consistency condition, the three-point function. These are theorems on the signal of all single field inflation. And also, we'll see how, from this effective theory, you can see that there is a way to violate the energy condition in a stable way. And then I will do the conclusion.
So you define the metric and then background condition, and then out of that you construct the pi field. Is that how you
mean? Yeah.
For example, pi with something related to G00 or something.
Yeah, pi again is related to, if you can consider this as zeta, the classic, the standard field of saturation of range.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to figure out how you want to reconstruct it out of metric.
Yeah, I will do this explicitly. Okay, then please ask me again if you. So okay, now let's begin the construction. So what is inflation? Inflation is a theory around quasi the sitter, but with a physical clock. There is a need of a physical clock because in the sitter there is no time. The translation is a symmetry, and there is instead a physical clock which tells a certain point that inflation must stop, and you want to begin the FRW. The fundamental normal story. Therefore, there is a physical clock which breaks time translation. And since, and then we can use this physical clock and choose among all the possible coordinates, the one in of the sitter, the one that chooses as his clock, this physical clock. That is, you can take, you can choose your equal time slices so that phi is constant around is uniform around this slices. This is equivalent to go to the gauge where delta phi is equal to zero. Once you are here, you write down the most generic Lagrangian compatible with the symmetries you have, and with the fields you have. And the fields you have now are only the metric because there is no more delta phi in the Lagrangian. And compatible with the symmetries that you still have. And the symmetries in this gauge that we still have is time-dependent spatial diffeomorphism. Because we have done a time diffeomorphism. So time diffeomorphism is fixed by this condition, but still we can reparameterize as we want each of these surfaces. So time-dependent spatial diffeomorphism. And for example, and what are these operators we can write? For example, a generic fashion of time is fine. Time translation is not a symmetry, but it's okay. Then upper zero indices on the metric flotation are okay. For example, G00, R00, these are invariant operators. Or even a more complicated geometric three-dimensional object built on these three-dimensional spatial slices, like, for example, the extrinsic curvature of this surface here. And one can prove that the most generic Lagrangian that one can write is a generic function of the Riemann, G00 with upper indices, K min nu, gram mu, and T. Now, one does effective field theory and expands each operator in perturbations, and expand up to a certain level in perturbation, in fluctuations, and in derivatives, because we're looking at low energy effective field theory. And therefore, the most generic Lagrangian from that one can get is this one. This one is, this is the standard Heisenstein-Hilbert term. Then there are two pieces which are linear in the fluctuation, they start linear in the fluctuation, because G00 has a background value, which is minus one, the FRW metric. But then there are fluctuations, and those are start linear. And there is also this time-dependent cosmological constant, let's call it this way, which gets a linear contribution from the square root of g determinant when I expand into fluctuation. And then there are quadratic pieces in delta g00, cubic pieces in delta g00, and then there are higher derivative terms, like the extrinsic curvature, which has one higher derivative with respect to g00 on the metric, the square, and so on and so forth. OK.
When you have this extra curvature squared, do they appear here somehow?
Or yes, yes. You put that here, I put total dot. And here that you can put a square, all the larger spots.
Why there's more than this term that you already have? Or?
Yeah, so it depends on the scale of which you suppress these operators. So what one may do is saying that these what one may do is that this operator must be very, very small, very, very suppressed. At this point, everything is so suppressed. There's also this other operator, which I consider automatically suppressed and important. They are as comparable as this one. And therefore, you consider them. But it works in a regime where everything is so you could do that. You can study the precision with this energy, the precision that you want. The only effect is that what is finding effect is an effect of what the temperature of understand, a relative correction with speed of sound temperature of understand. And here, OK, we will find the effects really of order one, bigger than one, so really different prediction with respect to standards of inflation. And we neglected this thing. So it's, they are there, and it depends on the level of accuracy.
There's no, at this point, you have a particular parameter, like that scale that introduced that you will say, that one of these terms, like maybe the last one should be those higher curvatures. That's why you say that these higher curvatures can be, they're very small, but they're as small as maybe the last.
They could be, yes. Okay. But if the problem is that those are very, always very, very small, the one of Weinberg's, and this can be much larger, much bigger. If everything is as small as the one of Weinberg, we are going to see nothing except standard Rolle inflation. So it's OK. Then it becomes really a matter of more in principle study. There is not any connection with the spec.
So for these terms to become big, you have to have F2s very small or very large? Or
very large. Very large.
Very large.
Okay. Yeah. But I agree with you that for the moment, this Lagrange, anyway, is not very clear. And later, we will see. So it is very general. And later, we will simplify it. In the regime. Okay, so here I was saying there are two linear terms, and so far we're still to impose that we are near the seated background. And in fact, if I take the variation of the formula Lagrange with respect to the metric, and I put all the metric fluctuations to zero, I'm recovering Einstein equation. But if I put the metric to zero, I'm considering the unperturbed Einstein equation because of the, and since I had two bases in the Lagrange which were linear in the fluctuations, when I take the derivative, they contribute to the unperturbed equation of motion. And in fact, if I do this recast equation, I put all the metric fluctuations to zero, then only the two terms which start in linear contribute to this equation, which are nothing but Einstein, the two FRW equation, Einstein equation. And one can solve this one, and one gets the same Lagrange of before, but with these two coefficients fixed. And this means that these two coefficients are fixed by the fact that you are in FRW or in quasi Sitter. And instead, all these other ones are really free. And now we have already used all the information was coming from the fact that we're imposing to be quasi Sitter. The information of being quasi Sitter forces these two terms. And now there is a whole set of new of inflationary theory with this kind of when these operators are there or not. In fact, let's see, since I agree that is still not very familiar, this Lagrange, let's see how some simple models can be written in this formalism. For example, consider a standard slow roll inflation. What we do here, we went to the unitary gauge where delta phi is zero and phi is in its upper term value. So d phi square becomes phi zero of t dot, and then there is a g zero zero here, and v of phi becomes v of phi zero of t. But these two terms, this term is the same as this. And in fact, if you use Friedman equation, phi dot square over two is in fact is n plus square over h dot, and v of phi zero of t is this term. Is exactly equal to this term. This means that standard Rolle inflation is this theory here with all the other operators set to zero. Analog is like generic Lagrange of P of X and phi, where X is d phi square. If I go to unitary gauge, the Lagrangian becomes square root of G, P of phi zero T, G zero zero square, G zero zero, times phi zero T, which is then if I tell expand in fluctuation G zero zero, this is just the polynomial in G zero zero, which is this kind of terms, apart from the trivial reshuffling.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, thanks. Phi zero dot, sorry. Yeah. Okay, it's the same as this one now, because this is X.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. And in fact, all simple models are really unified in this situation. So as I was saying, this is standard. If I put to zero all these other operators, this is standard zero inflation. Then all the operators on the first line can be modeled P of X file called K inflation or DBI inflation. Then if we go to the sitters, that is a third to zero, and we neglect this operator, we recover what is called Gauss inflation. And then if instead we put to zero this, we get even something else that it doesn't have a name, but it's still another inflation model. And we just find it because we are being general. However, as we are discussing, as I've been repeating several times, this is okay, this is a very generic Lagrange, but it's not very clear how to deal with. There is a scalar fluctuation, but what is the d fluctuation square? What is the kinetic term of the fluctuation? This is very complicated. It's within a particular gauge where the physics is not very transparent. And therefore, it would be nice to look for a simplified limit. And the simplified limit is kind of the fact when we realize that this is the Lagrangian for a spontaneously broken gauge theory, because time translation from the beginning were broken by the background. For example, if there is a scalar, well, this physical clock which breaks time translation, and we construct this Lagrange in the unitary gauge. So we've chosen a particular gauge, and therefore this time translation are spontaneously broken. And as we do for non-abelian gauge theories, we can reintroduce the Gaussian boson of time translation into this Lagrange. Let me explain how do we introduce the Gaussian boson in the standard Lagrangian of broken non-abelian gauge theories. So this is the equivalence theorem. So if I'm not clear, please ask me. So let's consider a non-abelian Lagrangian with a mass term. So this is broken, a non-abelian gauge theory broken, where mu is just mua times the generator, the standard non-abelian gauge theory. So under a gauge transformation, mu transforms in the following way. And therefore, if I do a gauge transformation to this Lagrangian, since it was a gauge invariant, I will get a Lagrangian which depends on the parameter of my transformation. In fact, it becomes this. This doesn't carry any u because it was gauge invariant, but the mass has a u. Now, the way to introduce the Gaussian boson is to call the u that appears after this transformation to promote it to a set of scalar fields. And therefore, u is e to the I, the generator, times this field, the pi, which now is not the gauge transformation parameter, but it's a field. A field which transforms according to this law under a gauge transformation. If this lambda was a u1, and this there would be in TA, this would be just a phase, and this transformation would be just a shift of pi goes in pi plus a constant. And now, if you do this, this Lagrangian is fully invariant under the gauge. You have introduced the gauge invariance. And now you can expand this operator, which contains covariant derivative of this exponential, and you find that there are interactions, self-interaction of the Gaussian boson, like pi squared d mu pi squared, for example, from the exponential. And then if you canonically normalize, you find that there is a cutoff. There are non-renormalizable interaction in this Lagrangian, and the cutoff is 4 pi m over g. However, if you look also, so there is a cutoff. Now, if you look also at the mixing term because of the covariant derivative, there are terms like a mu d mu pi weighted by the mass in canonical normalization, and you see that this term here becomes much less important than the kinetic term d pi square, which comes also from here. There is a d pi square for energy much above the mass m. This means that there is a parametric regime between M and 4 pi M over G, parametric in the weak coupling, in the weak coupling, so that in this regime, the physics of the Gostown boson is decoupled from the transverse polarization, which are in these gauge photons, but in the gauge boson. But it is still perturbative because it admits the cutoff. So in this regime, you can, in practice, study just the Gostown boson and get most of the physics right, because this is the field which will get strongly coupled in the ultraviolet. So it's capturing the most important, the leading parametric of the physics. And this is the Gostown boson equivalence theorem. That is, instead of studying the longitudinal polarization of the Gostown boson, of the gauge boson, you study the Gostown boson, which is just a scalar field instead of a vector field. So it's simpler. And now we do the same exactly for the Lagrangian we were starting with. So in our case, so our Lagrangian, now I will do only for these two terms, was a function of times and then times G0, 0. And in fact, it's a Lagrangian of spontaneously broken time translation. But therefore, we introduce the Gostown boson like doing before. We do a time diffeomorphism. And for example, G0, 0 goes into the standard transformation of the metric. And now the Lagrangian will be like the function a t becomes a of t minus zeta zero. In fact, time goes in time minus the translated time, minus the amount of the translation, plus the same time. And then the metric will have this kind of behavior because just inherited by this transformation. And it's full of zeta zero, obviously, because it wasn't time translation invariant. Now, if you call zeta zero pi, like here, and we substitute where there was zeta zero pi, and we say that pi transforms under time diffeomorphism in the following way, then this Lagrangian is invariant under time diffeomorphism at all orders. It's exactly the same procedure we did for the gauge boson, for the broken gauge theory, and we play here in a slightly more complicated Lagrangian. Now, this Lagrangian, if you do that, is still very complicated. Now, there are metric fluctuations. If you do in all the terms we have, there are metric fluctuations, and also now there are these pi's. But there is the equivalence theorem. We said that at high energies, the metric fluctuation don't matter, and you can concentrate just on the pi. So you can throw away all the metric fluctuations. And the reason why you are interested only into high energies is because inflation, and why you can actually do this, because inflation probes the theory at scales, energy scale over the Hubble. Because after a mode becomes less energetic, because you can think of inflation as an energy flow going where the mode gets reshifted. When a mode crosses the horizon, it gets freezed. In particular, there is a constant variable, the curvature, which doesn't evolve anymore after the mode has gone outside the horizon. Therefore, if you compute that at horizon crossing, you're fine, and you don't need to study the theory up to even to lower energies. This is the reason why we can compute prediction of inflation, because we compute a prediction for this variable which is constant after horizon crossing of scale, energy scale smaller than horizon. And then for the rest of the evolution, it's just constant of the unit, even though we don't know what is really the evolution of the universe. We don't know what is reheating, what is barogenesis, but they don't matter. And if we do this, so we introduce the Gostown boson, we put to zero all the metric fluctuation, we get this the following Lagrangian, which now it is much simpler than the one we started from. It is the Einstein term. Then there is this standard kinetic term, whose coefficient is this one. It's fixed by the De Sitter symmetries. Then you have this pi dot square, which comes together with interaction with an unknown coefficient, and pi dot cube with an unknown coefficient, and so on and so forth, higher dimensional operators. I will write the Stringy curvature later. The Stringy curvature, it was
there's a box on there.
Thanks. So the Stringy curvature will give you a Laplacian of I pi. Okay, square.
You don't have it there.
No, I put it later, okay, but it is there. I will put it later because it's not important. Usually there is this, you see there is this d pi square. This is a lower dimensional operator with respect to this. this is a kinetic gradient kinetic operator, but with which is higher here than the standard one. So it's suppressed by the cutoff. And here, in general, there is this one which is dominating, unless you make this one very, very small. And so I will introduce later, unless you go very, very close to the city. Okay, and I will explain this later. Okay, so now we're done all these Lagrangian, which again contains all the inflationary models. And
are you going to tell me what the cutoff is and what the decoupling is?
Yes. Okay, yes. If not, please ask me. I will have a slide on that.
No, sorry. Is it correct that you consider as high energy, so treatable in this way, the fluctuations so smaller than the Abel scale?
Yes.
So everything happens inside the Abel scale, you consider it at sufficiently high energy?
Well, it depends on the parameter. It depends really on the parameter. This is, okay. What is true is that there is an mx scale, and if energy is bigger than this mixing, I can consider this Lagrangian. Okay, because I can neglect the fluctuation. But I care of an energy of order Hubble. So if Hubble is much bigger than mx, which I can estimate every time, then I'm fine. Okay? And I will give you an example of what is the mixing scale. Okay? Yes?
It'd be a silly question. So I understand that you are organizing your effective action by in some sense, Pauli's G0 plus 1, right?
Yes, and the derivatives, yeah.
Right. But G0 plus 1 is sort of growing powers, because it's small, sort of, sometimes
yeah.
Small. Why is that the only thing? I mean, you can construct other... First of all, I have a question. One, why are you assuming that it's only an integer powers? And second question is, what about, say, square root of G, or, you know, the determinant of the metric plus,
yes.
You know, plus a, you know, a to the space or something. I can also build a small parameter in this way and so organize.
I think, in principle, there are things that you can use. So, square root of g, for example, square root of g0, you can again tell the span around the background. Okay. So, yeah.
Not square root of g, yes, but not square root of g, not plus 1. Right, so
yes, I think the amount only at field definition, that there should be just field definition, that when you insert the pi, they are the same. Because, you can ask the same for the scalar field, you know. Why I use pi, not square root of pi. And, you should use an invertible, but apart from the subtlety, it is...
Well, but if you want to be general in the effective field theory approach, right, so... I guess what you're telling me is that you're making an implicit assumption that your effective action is analytic in the field. But then, that's my first question. But then I had another question is, why is that the only small parameter? I mean, the other one, I'm saying I can construct a determinant of the metric,
yes.
And subtract, you know, a to the 6, for example.
Yeah, you mean that is a fluctuation.
Right.
You mean
think of that as
well, but it's the same. No, I mean it's just the reshuffling of the terms.
Okay, so you think that the other one I
I have a square root of g here. I mean in unitary gauge. But you could tell the span is one. Is the same. I mean just a filter. Okay. Yes, it's a little. You could do that. The mapping is a little complicated, but it's the same. But okay, let me. It's a generic Lagrangian, but as we were saying, it's not clear what is the cutoff source and everything. So let's go and explore it in a various limit and just recover all the inflationary model and discuss of these points when they appear. So to get some familiarity, let's study the various limits of single field inflation. Let's start with standard Zorn inflation. As we have seen before, standard Zorn inflation was set by putting all these dimensions, all these operators which were added beyond standard Zorn inflation to zero, and the Lagrangian was just a time-dependent cosmological constant plus G0. Now, when I insert the pi, all time-dependent becomes t plus pi, and G0 becomes this factor here. And it is still very messy, even for standard zone inflation. However, here I'm repeating the procedure. If you look at terms of the mixing, like you get from here, for example, a term which is pi dot delta g 0 weighted by m plus square h dot. And if you compare to the d pi square, which is also from here, pi dot square, you see that mixing is relevant only for scale smaller than this mixing scale, which is epsilon to 1/2 Hubble, where epsilon is h dot over a square, epsilon is the standard zone parameter. So the mixing is always irrelevant on scale larger than Hubble, it's suppressed by epsilon. And therefore, if for scale of order Hubble and at the leading order is roll, because there are effects, but they're just suppressed. So in principle, if you want, you can compute them. You just need to work with all these Lagrangian. But if you're interested in the leading order correct result, then you can drop all these things, all these derivative metrics, and just live with this Lagrangian, which is a standard a master scalar field in the seat. And still from this, and this somehow we know that there is no interaction because Mandelson computed the interaction for standard, the non-Gaussian for standard zone inflation, and he found that there were epsilon suppressed. And so far we have a free scalar field in the seat, and we can compute the two-point function. Canonically normalized, we get this result. And how do we go from these to metric perturbations? Well, so there is an intuitive and a more concrete way of doing it. So at horizon crossing, when the modes shift up to horizon crossing, then there is a variable which becomes constant, which is zeta. But zeta, and so we must compute that in terms of pi. But the zeta, what is the zeta? The zeta is defined in the gauge where pi is zero, that is in a uniform inflaton gauge. It is defined as this, the perturbation to the spatial metric, which is, if you want, just a rescaling of the scale, a space dependent scale of the scale factor. Ignore this, these are just the tensor modes. So, in order to find pi, we just do a time shift, t goes in t minus pi, so that pi, which was shifting under time translation, becomes zero, and compute the resulting metric perturbation, which is just h pi. So, this is the curve of the perturbation that we'll serve in the CMB now. And it's somehow intuitive why the ratio between zeta and pi is just h pi, because pi, as you see, shifts under time translation. And somehow this pi is a time translation, fluctuation of time along your classical trajectory. That is, you are fluctuating a little forward, a little backward in time. Now, when you cross the horizon, the thing that zeta becomes constant is a space-dependent rescaling of the metric. So it's how much its region of the universe has expanded from one point to another. And how much, if one point was time delayed by pi, how much is expanded more or less? Just h pi, h times delta t h pi. So this relation is somehow intuitive, but you can just compute it. And then from this, anyway, you uncanonically normalize and you find, and you just put a h pi square, and you find this result, which is just a standard result, without having to do any calculations. And also you can compute even the tilt, which is just the derivative with respect to this quantity at horizon crossing, and you find again the standard result. However, so with this Lagrangian of pi, you're able to compute the two standard results, but you cannot compute everything. In the sense that the terms which are suppressed by the mixing scale, by the ratio of a mixing over Hubble, must be computed using the full Lagrangian like this. And this is, for example, for the three-point function, which comes, is dominated by this mixing, terms we mix with gravity. Sorry, before going on. Anyway, I put all this term to zero, but we had no symmetry reason to put that term to zero. In fact, when we started with the effective Lagrangian, we wrote them down, because effective Lagrangian, everything which is compatible with the symmetries should be there. And in fact, if you compute loops, you find that those terms are generated. For example, if you consider this loop, these graviton loops, you estimate the loop and you find logarithmic divergences like this one. And in fact, you find the G00 plus 1 square, which is one of the powers of G00. And in fact, this is equivalent, if you think in terms of scalar field language, this is equivalent to d phi to the fourth term. In fact, if you put the unit case d phi to the fourth, this becomes G00. G00 square. And in fact, this effect was computed by Toft and Vetra. So just to avoid, there are no cancellation, there is really this term. This is a very remarkable paper. And this term, as I will explain later, changes the speed of sound of the scalar perturbation. It has a physical effect. And the amount of changes of the scalar field is, however, very, very small. It's a order of 10 to the minus 10, so very small. But we see that the additional operators are really generated by the loops. And it depends on the scale of new physics. Here we're doing loops of gravitons. But if the scale of new physics is lower than the Van Planck, this operator can be bigger. And in fact, this is what occurs in other examples. And this effective theory is systematically encoding the effects of high energy physics. And this is exactly the analysis that we do for the standard model when when we do constraints on the precision that we test. We put all the higher dimensional operator at some scale, and then we put constraints on the coefficient of this higher dimensional operator. And again, here, experiments will put constraints on this coefficient. For example, if we compute gravitational waves, then we will have the gravitational waves, you can compute, it's a standard result, this one, H squared of M Planck, and also square, and then the gravitational wave fields is this one. This means that if you measure these, the tilt and the amplitude of the probability aspect of the gravitational waves, you measure H and epsilon, and therefore, if the two-point function of the scalar field, like in standard zone inflation, is just this one, where CS is one, you can predict what should be the amplitude of the power spectrum. And therefore, this is a so-called the consistency condition standard zone inflation. However, if there is a smaller speed of sound, which is different from one, then this consideration doesn't hold. You see it violated. And this means that already if you confirm it, let's say at order one, this means that this CS is not different, much different from one. It's not much smaller than one. And this means that the operator here, which in our Lagrangian is proportional, the coefficient of the operator, which is m^2, is less than this number. So this is an example to say that you really experiment put constraints on this operator like we do for the standard model. When we say that this operator is at 10 TV scale suppressed.
So you think this last line comes from experiments?
Yeah, if you confirm the consistency relation, this means the CS, you have to look in this. This means the CS, even order one, this is not completely, you're not measuring it better, but order one, this means that one of the CS is of order one. This means that as I would say, this coefficient, the bigger it is, the smaller the speed of sound. So it cannot be too big if you see that CS is at most of order two. It's bigger, is of order one, it's not very, very small. Okay? This means that the coefficient must be smaller than order this number.
Okay, so CS could be in principle very small.
Yeah, you will see a deviation from the consistency relation. If you're lucky enough,
would it be easier to see it from with non Gaussianity as opposed
to? Yes, yes.
Because total gravity waves you can't really.
Yes, particularly for this most. Well, no, I'm not sure, because if CS were the one, you don't have very detection. Depends on life, in the sense that it depends on the smallness of this epsilon, if we are going to see rotational waves or not. CS of order one, which is what you're talking about, is on threshold of being seen from experiment in the number studies. And we don't know really if we can do that. And here you are not sure that you will see, but at least you have to.
But that
to
also has degeneracy with higher order, and this doesn't.
Yes, thanks. Okay, but anyway, now this was for standard zone inflation. Well, and we saw the standard zone inflation was generating this kind of operator from the loops. But this operator doesn't need to be very, very, very small. It depends on the scale of new physics. And in particular, if I consider it, we see that in its full extension, we see that this term here, I insert now the other two operators coming from G00, and we see that the I pi, there is only one of it, and therefore the coefficient of the gradient kinetic term is fixed by the background. this is, to me, a surprising symmetry of the FRW. So this is in the sitter in FRW, the scalar degrees of freedom, the Gostung boson, the coefficient of the gradient term is the pi. Time is m plus square h dot, is fixed. And in particular, this sign is the right one for h dot less than zero. But for h dot bigger than zero, this is an instability, a gradient instability, which is very far, very dangerous instability. And this explains why for many years people try to violate the energy condition, which in cosmology means h dot bigger than zero, and they were finding always instabilities. The reason is that is this grad here, which is always pushing you, it's stable. However, the pi dot square, however, later I will explain how it's, in fact you can really avoid the, you can really do the violation of the energy condition where you have in a particular regime, thanks to the, again, to this effective field theory. So, however, also going on, the pi dot square is not fixed by this coefficient because there is another one here. And this means that if I push this operator high, then I'm reducing the speed of sound. In fact, you can work out the relationship. One over the speed of sound square is just one minus m to the fourth m plus square h dot. The bigger is this operator, the smaller is the ratio between the gradient term and the time term, which is the speed of sound. And this is not surprising because Lorentz invariance here was broken from the beginning. So CS equal one wasn't protected. It's okay, we're finding this. And also, if you want to put CS bigger than one, less than one, because CS bigger than one might be non compatible with the Lorentz invariance UV theory, like Arkhanimedov's proposed, this might not be your requirement. Right? Anyway, you have a constraint on 2 to the fourth bigger than zero. So let's see that either experiments or request about the UV completion forces constraints on this operator. And expressing this m to the fourth in terms of CS, we get the following Lagrange, m plus square over CS, the standard kinetic term with different from one speed of sound, and then we have this interaction. This, again, as we did before, when we use this Lagrange, we should check that the mixing term are negligible at the energy scale of the Hubble. And if one studies the mixing term due to, for example, to this term here, there are mixing terms of the form that this was delta G00 square. So there are terms like delta G00 pi dot, weighted by this coefficient to the fourth, and one can work out when this mixing term is negligible with respect to this pi kinetic term, and we'll find that the mixing scale is m2 square over m Planck, which again, in terms of speed of sound, which means that in order to use the Lagrange, H, the Hubble rate must be bigger than m square of m Planck. If it is not, you have to use the Lagrange, not in unitary gauge. You cannot put the metric to zero. You can still use this effective Lagrange, but you cannot use just the pi Lagrange, the Lagrange of the Gostung boson. But if H is much bigger than this number, which means that epsilon over C square is much less than one, then you can use this Lagrange. And for example, here you can compute the 2-point function because these are cubic term. And as we did before, you find the standard results. Like now the speed of sound is different from one, so there is one over CS, as we saw before. Because this is not standard Zeroni inflation. Epsilon is H dot over the, thanks, sorry. Epsilon is H dot over H square. It's just a measure of how far you are from the seat, okay?
This is broken, or is that right?
What?
No, it's the same story in TBI. Hmm?
It's okay. Yeah, it depends on the value of CI, but now we are still experimentally. This is okay. We are in this regime experimentally, unless there are strange cancellations.
Is that right? We are in that regime experimentally.
Yeah, I will. Because this will, if CS is too small, we will have very big number of CIs. And I think they're already ruled out.
It depends
on epsilon, sorry.
Yeah, it depends on epsilon.
No, yeah, but we know that epsilon cannot be, yes.
CS should be not.
So, it's okay.
One less than one over, epsilon is 1/100, and CS squared is 1/100, then it would be 1.
Yes.
But CS 1/100 is too much FNL.
Not in the collateral. It's not ruled out.
It's not the old
app, Okay, I mean 100. Okay. It's, oh yeah, right. Okay, okay. It's then. It's okay. Yeah, right. Thanks.
It has epsilon being for the 1/100, and it could be here.
Yeah, but just.
And then yeah.
But
then at least here is all order of epsilon squared over minus 1. So
it's
minus 1 is that linear order in epsilon, so it's so is that where you're being in 1/100? No, I was wrong.
It's not clear that we are in the for epsilon. I was confused when I saw it. So there is no direct constraint on epsilon, so that in principle could be anything.
Yeah,
you have fine tuning right for to get an S9 to one raise one.
But if that match if it happens at DPI, I found it. So that Hilf is very small.
Yeah, go ahead.
Carry on.
Okay. Anyway, if you're not in this regime, you just need to have to work with the full Lagrangian. So and okay, so you can do this the standard calculation, you find the standard result. Yeah, somehow for DBI, the leading, okay, you can still take this, okay. The leading effect in DBI still comes from this effect. When the interaction is very, very large, these effects are still smaller than the leading one. And so you can still neglect the DC, but okay. So anyway, if I write the action in this way, you see that there is a 1/CS² here, multiplying the cubic term. And this in fact shows that when you have a small speed of sound, you are forced to have a large set interaction of the field. And this is this has been noticed before, but there was no reason. And the reason here is just that the nonlinear realization of time diffeomorphism is forcing that whenever you have a smaller speed of sound, you have a strong self interaction. And also you have an operator which is instead not constrained by the cube, which is this one. And you can see that these operators, which are self-interaction, will give large non Gaussianities. And you can actually estimate it. And the way to estimate what is the size of these non Gaussianities is to measure the ratio of the Lagrangian at horizon cross, interaction Lagrangian at horizon crossing over the quadratic Lagrangian. And if you work out the algebra, this becomes 1/CS² times the zeta, which is the curvature of perturbation. And this coefficient is just FNL. This FNL is about the 1/CS². In fact, for this model, the full calculation had already been computed by Castro et al. And in fact, the answer was this, which is very similar. Parametrically, it's okay. And again, when you do experiment, they set limits on this coefficient, which was M2, and this coefficient. And in fact, the WMI5 limits, which I finally adopted the technique that we developed for the data analysis of the CMB. This year they adopted this technique. This is the constraint. And if you assume that this is zero, or you are saying bearing cancellation with this non-Gaussianities, you see that this implies a constraint of this term, which is Cx bigger than 3%. So we're already beginning to put constraints on there.
That's just
yes. I think it's
yes.
Could you
square
it?
Square of 3%, what is a square? Like, what's the small for that?
1,000.
Okay, so that's.
So that's. I think we are.
It's a square.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, anyway. Simple math.
Okay. And again, you can do for the. Here, the same linear realization which was forcing phi cube, nonlinear realization of time diffeomorphism, which was forcing self interaction phi, we force also fourth quartic self interaction phi. Here was just the cubic. And again, you can find the estimate, the size of the support function, and you find again that it goes like 1/6^4. And so we see that these aligns the connection between small speed of sound and the scalar transformation. So here, now about the cutoff, as we are saying, as we are noting, when you have CS smaller than 1, the pi theory is not normalizable. That is, there are fluctuations. And in particular, one can do the loops and see that this theory becomes strongly coupled with scale lambda. And lambda is this expression here, in terms of speed of sound, is this. And the important part is that in the limit in which CS goes to zero, the cutoff goes to zero. So we see that the speed of sound makes the self interaction stronger. Since the self interaction are irrelevant, lower the cutoff. And this means that in order for this use at all this theory, then the Hubble must be smaller than the cutoff. This means the speed of sound much bigger than 3^-3, which is already okay experimental. So this is what I was getting confused before, sorry. So we are already sure, from, for example, for DBI, that we are not in the strong copy regime, and we are, but this is just an experimental fact. It wasn't true a priori. And also, one can wonder at this point, since we are talking about very small speed of sounds, one can worry if this speed of sound gets renormalized, this is natural, because whenever you have something small, you should worry.
That's the Gaussianity constant, right? And my Gaussianity must be small. Right?
Yes.
So if you break that limit, then my Gaussianity is of order of 10^5 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, they undo, and so one can worry if the speed of sound, a small speed of sound is protected. And you, again, you can just compute the loop, compute the normalization of the speed of sound, and you find that since the cutoff is very small, the loop which actually renormalizes the speed of sound is smaller, the correction is very small, smaller than the one, than the speed of sound itself, whatever is the speed of sound. This means that a very small speed of sound is still natural. And this is okay, because we could have said it from before, because all the interactions I've been considering here are irrelevant interactions. And this means that they don't produce a larger renormalization. And the theory is what we can define natural. There is no big mass parameter, there is no small mass parameter which gets normalized. The operators which are creating problems for naturalness are the relevant or the relevant one, like a mass term, the cubic operator, and they're not there, so there won't be large normalization. In reality, there are still in this Lagrangian relevant operator, which come from when in the Lagrangian we were having. So whenever we said that whenever we have a function of time, like until 4, or t becomes t plus pi. So, and for example, this was multiplied to 0 squared. So, this when it's expanded, you get, for example, pi squared term. But this pi squared is suppressed by the Taylor expansion here. And the time dependence of this coefficient is protected by symmetry, which is an approximation symmetry of pi. And this means that this term there, even though small, they are not large. Even though present, they're protected by this approximate symmetry and are never important. And here I will explain how the shift symmetry arises. So, if we take really the Sitter limit, we see that the speed of sound goes to zero because H dot goes to zero, CS, one of the CS goes to infinity, so CS goes to zero. And therefore, the cutoff of the theory seems to go to zero. This seems to me that the Sitter limit is unachievable, is unphysical. However, this is due to the fact that the coefficient of grad pi square was fixed to be h dot. And therefore, even though this is a relatively low dimension operator, the standard grad pi square, its coefficient is made small by the symmetry. And at this point, a higher dimensional operator, though higher dimensional, so suppressed by the cutoff, can become even more important than the one which is set to zero by symmetry. And this is what occurs here. And in fact, if you consider a higher dimensional operator like the Strinsic curvature, when you insert the pi, you get this term that I was saying before. And this term here, when you go to the Sitter, wins over the Sitter, the standard grad pi square. And in particular, when it wins, you can really take the Sitter limit. And you find an inflation which works in exact the Sitter. And the special relation in this scale becomes omega of order k squared, proportional to k squared, not of k. So it's a strange special relation. It's very non-relativistic special relation. But again, Lorentz symmetry wasn't required by the symmetry of the problem. And here, anyway, once you're in the Sitter, one sees that there is no time dependence in the Lagrangian, it's not time dependent forced by the factor alpha w, because you have only h, which is time dependent, and all the other parameters are free. And therefore, if you impose that the pi goes into pi plus constant is a symmetry, then you are forced not to have any time dependence in these coefficients. This means that when you go out of the seat in standard FRDA, in close to the seat, this means that the time dependence of this coefficient is suppressed by the roll, but how far you are from the seat. It must go to zero in the limit. And therefore, you cannot, it's consistent for it to go to zero in the limit. And therefore, the higher the mass terms of the cubic interaction, which are raised from this stereo spatial, never become important, because they're never. The mass is always lighter than a Hubble, it's consistently lighter than a Hubble, and therefore the theory is natural. And by the way, this theory here is as a name, it's Gauss condensation or Gauss inflation, and we see that we have smoothly connected from Gauss from standard Schwarz inflation continuously to Gauss inflation.
Why does it say that these terms are not local if you don't go to the unitary gate, I guess?
Yes, but because these are because they are one of the square root of d phi square, but okay. If you think in terms of scalar field, you like one. However, this is really an effective theory, and everything is really meant to be terror expanded in the fluctuations. Okay? So if you terror expand these, they are really local terms. They are like they are this thing here, grad phi square, they are not really. They are not local.
Are they not local in the same sense as the three-point function you get non-local contributions like in the multi-scene function? Is the same kind of thing where you end up with whatever you say. Is it like solving the equation of motion and then get 1/x? I think is that what's coming here?
Yes, but you know, I'm not sure about the same as non-local, no, because it's a huge
fixed
function.
The question is, if you start the local action, can you get this?
I think you can get the first term of this stereo series. I think there is no problem. Probably still you don't get the full term. And nobody told that you should take this full term, this term at all the perturbation. You have not resolving. It's just the term of expansion. So okay. In fact, Weinberg doesn't find this effective theory in his approach because he cannot see them. Okay, and I think this means that the approach. See, while this theory, as I was saying, is natural, so an effective theory to me should automatically pick up them, like this one.
So what you did basically is you went to a limit where you lost these terms,
yeah.
And then you imposed a new symmetry on the
translation. On translation, and this means that it's consistent to assume that this time dependency is strongly suppressed when the symmetry is. Yeah. Okay, and this effect is Gauss inflation. We recover continuously Gauss inflation, and again, as always, we have to care of the missing in gravity. For example, delta chi j gives this kind of term. And when you square, you get the mixing, and you can estimate again the mixing, and you get this scale here. So if Hubble is bigger than this scale, you can just do everything with the pi Lagrangian. Notice exactly that this scale here is independent of the curvature of Hubble. It's completely independent of the curvature of the space-time. And this is, in effect, what you can call really a modification of gravity. That's why post-condensation is called a modification of gravity. Because the gravity is modified on a scale much higher than the background induced by the stress energy tensor. And therefore, it's really modifying in such a way in your local frame where you would expect to be in Minkowski. And in particular, the Kappel limit, this Gauss inflation Lagrangian becomes just this one. And you can compute the perturbation. In particular, since here the scaling is not realistic, this is very, very, is a little complicated. Because the scaling dimension of pi are to the 1/4. Pi, if the scaling goes like. The scale inside is 1/4. And therefore, the fluctuation of pi at horizon side are the fluctuation at the cutoff scale times the ratio of h to m to the 1/4, which is the ratio of the scale at which you're running, to the scaling dimension, which is 1/4. And this is this ratio. So, and then you can just go to zeta and find the standard result. of those inflation. Which force is the normalization of Kolbe force is that this is just on the map now. Force is that they want to be delta minus 5. And this means that there are a lot of number sizes about inflation. Because if you compute the ratio of the again the number size by this, note that this term here is M2. So this is G00 square. So this M2 was G00 square. So there is a something when you reintroduce the pi, there is, you get interactions. And then you see that this set interaction, which is this one, is the most important one. If you do the algebra, you find that because of the scaling dimension, which is different from 1/5, this means that the scaling dimension of this is not 1, but is 1/4. And therefore, pi, sorry, not 2, but is 1/4. And therefore, the Nogo size are very large, about the h over m to the 1/4. And this is just on tension with the experiment. And here, for cost inflation, really, the pi language is mandatory. If you think in terms of scalar field, then it's very complicated. You might even think that it's very confusing. You might think there are ghosts instead of normal.
Yeah, is that an example of it that reduces to that around some background?
No, there is no UV complete theory. You mean UV complete or Lorentz invariant theory? So you can write a Lorentz invariant with a scalar field which goes there.
Okay, Lorentz invariant theory.
But yeah, but that's not UV complete. There is no.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Okay, so nobody knows the UV completion of even if you write in terms of phi, there is a cutoff.
Well, I mean, in the same sense that this, there was a theorem that CS cannot be larger than 1 for a UV complete.
Yeah, there is no such a theorem. There doesn't exist such a theorem for ghost inflation. So nobody knows if ghost inflation, at least nobody that I know knows that ghost inflation cannot be UV completed. That would be great to prove, but nobody has proved that. Okay. So since we are general, we found also another way to do. I'm a little maybe over time, so I will. Can I have five more?
Yeah.
Then, so we found another way to do the Lissette limit without having to do the Gauss condensate. There was another operator like this, which once you introduce the pi, gives you a gradient graph pi square term after you integrate by part. And this is not just a tautological derivative because you have in Lissette. This means that and there is an h here. So this means that in Lissette, you can have another way of doing the propagation with this operator. Whose propagation is just omega squared, c squared, or k squared. But the speed of sound is not 1, but it's given by the ratio of this term with the pi dot squared, which comes from M2 from this term. And the speed of sound is just this one, which is vice versa. This means the non generic propagation, especially for the Gauss composite in the sitter, is of this form. It's not just the Gauss condens, but there is also this step here. And again, one can do the non Gaussian, there are non Gaussian, large. Because the speed of sound is very small. However, one can at this point wonder if we found the omega square over the k square over k to the fourth, can I tune this parameter and put the k to the sixth? So, and one can really put an end to the story because one can see that in the sitter, you are forced to have self interaction. You are forced, this term here gives you pi dot square plus pi dot grad pi square. So, whenever you have the sitter, you need to have this one, this term here. So, you need to have an M2. And therefore, you have an interaction. And with this special relation, the scaling dimension of pi are this complicated number. And this means that this operator here becomes, get these dimensions, scaling dimension, and this is infrared strong. It means that as you run to low energy, strangely, this becomes stronger and stronger. It's completely different scaling than the standard relativistic field theory. And therefore, with such a special ratio, you wouldn't have a predicted theory. This is strongly coupled. So this means that there is an end. And these are the only two special ratios you can have with a couple of this special ratio for the Gauss condensate.
I thought that in general, the scalar space, the scalar fluctuations were pure gauge, or that's only in slow run inflation.
No, when we're recovering the sitter space, we're not recovering the full set of schemes in the Lissette space.
Oh.
Because time translations are always broken. Because if you think of some Gauss condensation in terms of a scalar field, because there is a scalar field which is moving at constant speed. never flowing down. It's a very strange solution, but there is. This means that, and you have the sitter, the ground.
So it's not pure. Well, the background is the metric is this here, but some.
Exactly. Yes, but there is no time translation in back. And here is the fact that there is this pi field. The realization of time translation is nonlinear.
Sorry, could you go back to the previous slide? So this you're saying omega squared k. So you're talking about the higher order terms in that expansion of the dispersion relation, right? Is that?
Yeah. No. There is not. This is exact. For example, if I tune the extensive curve of the go to the sitter, tune also this to be zero, then I could have an operator like a grad of the extrinsic curvature square, okay, last square, which will give me di to the fourth pi square.
And you're saying you cannot have that one because.
No. If you are dominated by this one, the speciation, then you are strongly coupled.
Okay, but that's if you truncate your expansion at some point. But if this is an infinite expansion, you could. Then this argument doesn't go really because you may never have a steep power law like that. I mean, like, I don't know. If
yeah, to me that is true. But then you need to have a UV complete theory. If you are summing, you need to have a UV complete theory and you need to be under control.
So you're saying this dispersion cannot be very steep, basically. That omega squared.
But I would say it's very strong. It can be only this two.
But that this is your argument. This is and that.
Yes.
Not just for a power law, right? So if it's a power law, then it shouldn't be very steep, but then...
Well, the point is that if you're just doing it as an effective field theory, this is all you can get. But if you had a complete theory, then maybe you can find something on the purpose, right?
Yeah, I mean, but you need to have the use of the theory. You should be able to trust the summation. In general, you don't.
But this statement is true only if you have a pure power law. Right, the constant that you're talking
this
about.
This statement is true in FTP field.
Okay.
You just can't build anything other than any other higher terms just out of pure.
Okay, so anyway.
But I have two more slides, and first.
I think everybody who needed to leave, I think, just left.
Okay, sorry. So anyway, so these are just a couple of quick things. I skip some parts, but since this theory was so general, you can prove the theorem on the signal of the inflation. In particular, there was a consistency condition of the Freeport function of the CMD of single field inflation. We said in the limit of which one decays of the Freeport function goes to zero, that is when the triangle decays, because the metallization invariant from the triangle becomes very, very squeezed, the Freeport function can be expressed just in terms of the two-point function. The part is just the two-point function. And it was a consistent condition from Mandelstam and generalized to by Gagnon and Zadariaga. But it wasn't really proved very well, in the sense that it was right and sort of proved, but it was proved at the level that if someone did a calculation and didn't find this result, it was still allowed to say maybe it doesn't work, this consideration, it doesn't work. So what we did, we actually made precise the former argument, but also we just proved by exhaustion that this holds, because you just can compute the Freeport function for all single field models. And that's what we did. This is an important consideration because it allows you to rule out single field inflation if you find non-Gaussianities in this limit, which are very large. Because this consistency relation tells, when you spell it out, tells that the non-Gaussianities in this limit are very, very small. Also, when we go to the sitter, we could have imagined to do even beyond the sitter and try to make H-tor bigger than zero. This will be violation of the energy condition, which is sometimes called even W as a minus one, where W is the constant acceleration rate of the today's acceleration. If this was the case, it would be like a scalar field going up the potential without slowing down. If it's slowing down, H-tor is still negative. And when we go to the sitter, we put all our dimensional operators in our effective theory, we see that there is the new pi square, which has this coefficient. Then there is the pi dot square, so that the pi dot square can have any time. But the pi is fixed. And then there are higher derivative terms like the extrinsic curve. This means that the dispersion ratio is on this form. For a shot bigger than zero, this is bad. This is bad. Now notice that this is the stability, but notice that there is a k to the fourth. So in the ultraviolet, this gate by default is okay. So the specialization is not.
So yes. this is specific to ghost conversation.
Yes. But
the previous one you showed a couple of slides
ago,
that one.
You could do the same, yes, you could do the same also there, yes.
And there's not that great stability there.
Yes, but it's true that, yes, you're right, it's true, but still it only works for the narrow parametric range. Yeah, what is invariant is that h dot must be always more than h squared. But then it's either always stable or unstable. Yeah, maybe I should have said that I was just picking one of the two. Yeah, so far, we know, and in fact, here we find that there are only two operators which allow you to buy an energy condition. This one and the other one, if I mention. Anyway, so now here there is a grand instability which will dominate in infrared. But if this one it dominates is lower than Hubble, then there is no more evolution. And therefore, if you choose the parameters so that this k squared term dominates after the Lasson crossing, you are safe from instability. And this occurs for this parametric window, which necessitates h dot positive but less than h squared. And this is the first example of stable operational energy condition.
So this could also dominate before horizon crossing, but
yeah,
then you have limited time for the instability.
It's true, yes, yes. In fact, there is also that possibility. Which I worked out. But, okay, it's somehow less nice because you cannot work for too long because the perturbation is growing. So, yeah, it's true, but it's parametric.
What was the initial condition of what that
yes.
example?
You need a very, very, very small initial humble so that, exponentially small because you're growing exponentially. So,
yeah.
And anyway, this is the variation of the energy condition which led to the new periodic models that us and Justin made. This was one of the two necessary ingredients for doing this new experiment. And this is also a unique energy condition for WSM-1 today. And then we are beginning to study the effect of perturbation. And let me remark that there is no loss in this theory, because this is just an effective theory. There is no. I think here you know very well, but there is no ghost. So let me summarize. This is the Lagrangian for all models of single field model inflation. And this is the systematic way of parametrizing energy effects to simple theory inflation. Experiments, as we see, set limits to this M2, to this area dimensional operator through non Gaussianis, through gravitational waves. We also found very explicitly what is called by the symmetry. For example, the spatial kinetic term is fixed by the background. And this to me was something really unexpected. And also we found how a light illuminates on the relation between energy condition and instabilities. And we also, this led to discovery on really how to violate the energy condition. And also there is a connection between one operator, which both reduces the speed of sound and gives large free input per path. So we understood this relationship. Also, in this effect here, the number of random operators is made explicit. That you can count. This amounts to counting the shapes of the Friedmann function. For example, for the Friedmann function, in the other area, you have only two operators. And those people field models are unified, like DBI, Ghost, and you can really prove theorems on the signal. Also, as I was saying, in file language, one can perform field definition, which are programmed. Because, for example, one language like this is equivalent to minimal model, which is something not so trivial. Pi instead gives a standard atomization of the leaves. And two last technical points. If you lose the Pi language, you go, for example, to a regime like DBI, where your field is running very, very fast, very, very fast. It's not obvious how to assess the importance of the operators. For example, a very high dimensional operator, d5 to dn, can contribute to the tuple function if I put 2n-2 legs on the background. And if the derivative of the background are not suppressed, this is as important as the other one. Instead, the Pi automatically resumes on this effect. And also, in Gauss inflation, the scaling is so complicated that the only way to make it sense is to work directly in this language. And also, loop corrections. And since there are all the operator with a certain number of legs and a certain order of derivative are fixed, loop correction should be really computed in this setup. Because again, if you have a theory like this, then you can have many, many contertemps to the frequent function, to a loop to the frequent function, because there are all these corrections. you can put as many layers as you want at the ground. And so instead, we find one should naively consider infinity number of quantum terms, which is that we buy a fixed on the net or derivative of a finite term. And that's up here.
I think everyone asked questions. Yeah.
So what will be the prescription again to calculate this coefficient? If I have some model with first the unitary gauge and
an example here. Let's see. You see, for example, if you have a Lagrange like this form, okay, you just go inside, just say that phi is phi 0 t, so that the unperturbed value that you found solving the solution of the unperturbed equation of motion, okay, and you, so you say that phi is phi 0 t, and you keep all the metric fluctuations. So, for example, this gauge becomes
like the unitary gauge, right? Like
this is the unitary gauge. This is the unitary gauge.
Then you expand the
right. Yeah.
Probably the last, I think. Or the GFI.
Well, yeah, it's, yeah, G0 is 1 over the square. 1 over the last square. Yeah. Yeah, it depends. Yeah, of course. ADM, which is 0.
Alright, so when do you leave tomorrow?
Tomorrow evening at 6.
Okay, so Gerardo will be around all tomorrow. So let's thank you again.
Thanks.